We'll begin, and I heard you introducing yourself as Mike, so...
That's correct.
Mike, welcome. Glad you're here. We'll ask for an opening statement in just a few minutes here, and then we'll go around the room after you've made your statement for any of the questions. When we approach the 45 minutes, then we'll stop with our questions and have you give any closing statement you'd like to make. Do you have any questions before we start?
No, not really. Just happy to be here.
All right. Well, then the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss my interest in becoming a member of the Board of Regents. I'd like to take the next few minutes to talk about the reasons why I'd like to be a regent, my qualifications, and a little bit of my vision for the University of Minnesota. Now, I have a passion for the university, its heritage, traditions, and what it's done for the people of Minnesota. I graduated from the university. My son's then. One of them is in the process of getting his MBA at Carleton. My wife worked in the university's hospital system. I was fortunate to be named the outstanding alumni of the Department of Applied Economics, and our family has established a scholarship fund at the university. There's no question that the university has made a positive impact on our lives, from making lifelong friends to career opportunities. I believe my experience and background makes me an ideal candidate for the Board of Regents. I've spent my entire career in some aspect of food and agriculture, the number one industry in the state of Minnesota. I'm currently running a fifth-generation farm. I served as the president of the American Soybean Association, a trade association that had 27,000 members in 26 states. While there, I was able to bring producers and multinational corporations together to negotiate favorable terms for China's accession to the World Trade Organization. This has resulted in an annual market of $13 billion for U.S. oilseeds. I've served on USDA's Biotech Advisory Committee, the joint USDA-DOE Biofuels Committee, and was a founding member of the National Biodiesel Board. During my tenure at USDA, I was the Associate Administrator of the Farm Service Agency. In this role, I oversaw 12,000 employees in 50 states. I was responsible for an administrative budget of $1.4 billion. We administrated 45 programs with $12 billion in annual benefits. From there, I moved on to be the Administrator of the Foreign Agriculture Service. I was responsible for a staff in 90 countries working on a wide range of issues from trade, food safety, to war reconstruction, and food aid. During my time there, I was reorganized the agency for the first time in its 53-year history. My involvement in East Dublin Dairy has given me first-hand experience in rural development. The hurdles of local and state regulations, raising equity, and bringing ethnic diversity to a rural community are all overcome, resulting in the completion of a $60 million project. It's now part of the largest dairy in the United States. The importance of the University of Minnesota has eroded in the everyday lives of Minnesotans over the past several years. I would hope to see a university that plays a role in the lives of everyone in Minnesota. This includes being a leader in setting and achieving high education standards, not only throughout the state, but across the nation, while also working to solve health care issues from availability and affordability to preventive medicine. Finally, I'd like to see the University of Minnesota become a leader in something all people need and are entitled to, food. Safe, abundant, nutritious food produced and delivered in a sustainable manner is concerned for not only for everyone in this state, but everyone in the world.
Thank you very much. Matt, question?
Mike, thanks for being here. Thanks for your interest in the Board of Regents. And as a fellow farmer, thank you for your service to our industry. Two questions, and I'll if I get a chance later on, I'll ask my second one. But I'm going to start with the first one. You reorganized an agency at USDA that is part of a large bureaucracy, was a large agency, and I'm sure it had many challenges to reorganize. You also were involved in the East Dublin Dairy, which is your neighborhood, which had its own unique set of challenges. Can you share with us some of the challenges of both of those and how you dealt with the conflict?
Well, in reorganizing the Foreign Agriculture Service, FAS, people are entrenched, particularly in government. I think everyone's probably bumped into that in their lives. And I was brought in to do it. I was ready to come back to Minnesota, and I got tapped by the undersecretary saying, we want you to stay. We want you to move upstairs and pick up the reins and reorganize this agency. I did it by talking to nearly everyone in the entire agency and told them basically the world is moving on. Change is inevitable. The industry that you're working for, agriculture, is changing at a breakneck speed. Unless you change, you're going to be left behind. Now, after having countless conversations, pointing out the fact no one was going to lose their job, no one had to move very far other than the normal movement between offices overseas, we got the job done. We got it done in a very timely manner. I surprised a lot of people. I got an award from the secretary for superior service for doing it. And I think the key to that was talking and communication and being very transparent. And that was very helpful, I think, in that respect. At Dublin Dairy, that was an interesting situation. It's a large dairy. It's a large CAFO, a confined animal feedlot. And it's a lot of people had concerns about that. And in retrospect, we did not do a very good job of explaining what we're trying to do. We had some problems with some litigation. We worked through it. And we sat down with a lot of people one by one, once again, explaining to what we're trying to accomplish, showing people existing sites, and also getting a lot of people involved. We went out to the community and got people to invest. We got people to commit to supplying with feed, taking the waste away. And finally, people started to understand the benefits of something like this. This is the largest business in our school district, maybe the second largest employer in the county. And it evolved over time, but it was very difficult. And then plus the fact we had a Hispanic workforce. And I was very troubled about the pushback we got from people, and my friends and people in western Minnesota, about bringing Hispanics in. And it's hard to describe some of the things that were said. I want to take those back now because they didn't realize the quality and the type of people we're bringing in, and now we're getting applauded for our effort because a third of them are college graduates. Many of them have families. They're integrated into our school system. Homecoming king. I mean, it's worked. But you had to roll up your sleeves. You had to roll up your sleeves and talk to people and probably use your integrity and, you know, personal relationships to carry the weight at the end of the day.
Very good. Thank you.
Not Margaret. Too long of answer, for sure.
No.
Nope.
Those are two great examples. Now think about the University of Minnesota. Think about what's the biggest problem you think they need to address. And with all the people at the University of Minnesota, do you think this sitting down one-on-one analogy would work at the University of Minnesota? So what I guess I'm asking you is a two-part question. What's the big issue from the seat that you're sitting in? And given your great background, because you have an incredible background, how would you think they should approach solving that?
You know, when I was growing up, the university seemed to touch our lives. I can remember before I went to grade school, my grandfather in the University of Minnesota Hospital. My other grandfather was a doctor. He came down and saying, you know, I don't know what else they can do for him, but it's the best place they can be. We had extension in agriculture. We were involved with that all the time. I don't see that so much anymore. I don't see the university. It's there if you want it, but people don't reach out to it like they used to. When I visit with people, the University of Minnesota is not brought up unless their son or daughter is attending the university. Or it's a citrus ball. That's, to me, that's problematic. Why isn't it touching people? And I just mentioned a few things I think we need to focus on. Start to touch people, and I think it's snowball effect. I mean, I would like to pick up The Economist and see where we're doing something in Africa that promotes food sustainability at the University of Minnesota. I have a close friend that's on the local school board. He never thinks talking about the University of Minnesota as a resource and how they can improve the education level of the school. I think those things need to be done. I'm not sure how it should be done. That's the type of thing we need to do. And in, I think what would result in that, I think we'd have a better relationship with the legislature. Clearly, outstate legislatures are not engaged in this, even the ones in Canada.
Good answer.
Thank you. Senator Bana.
Margaret's question and your answer led me in a different direction, but I'm going to go back to the question I had in my mind, which is you mentioned how fast the world of agriculture is changing. Nothing compared to, in my mind, right now what's happening with higher ed. It's going to be extinct as we know it. So as you look at that challenge, have you given thought to what you think the higher ed world is going to look like and how you might impact that transition to be productive and for the university ends up on the positive side?
On the positive side. Now, I think there's three things that really are driving the world. One's technology, one's globalization, and the last is consumer preferences or choices. And if you stop and reflect on that, almost everything you do is written out. Every business is that way. I think in a lot of respects, the university has to look at those three things. How they're going to interface with those three major trends. Take advantage of them to bring education, higher education to students. And it's going to probably be a lot different format than they're in right now. And you're right, it's changing very quickly.
Harriet.
Sure. In your application, you noted that you had a conflict for the interviews and that you would be in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. Did you arrange your schedule so that you could be here in person with us?
My wife did. She's having a spinal fusion on Thursday, so we had a cancer.
Thank you.
Lois.
Margaret and the Senator touched on two aspects of my question. World at a breakneck speed. And you referenced it to agriculture, but my guess is that you also view it as the world at a breakneck speed. And your university touching everyone's life. And then preventative medicine. Those are comments that you have made. I would like to ask you if you could go to the university touching everyone's life, the breadth of the university, the world at a breakneck speed, how would you see the university looking forward, not backwards, looking forward, being able to again reconnect with people's lives in Minnesota and perchance an emphasis on greater Minnesota, because we share that viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And then the second component of it, a two-part question, part of the world at a breakneck speed is this increasing evident emphasis on preventative medicine. If you could share some of your thoughts looking forward into the future about how the university may play a role in that, if it connects dots of some of the schools within the university with preventative medicine. So future-oriented, how can the university begin to impact our lives, emphasis greater Minnesota, and preventative medicine in the future, how the university plays a role.
Well, in greater Minnesota. I think I'll start with the technology. You know, it's interesting as I watch people adapt to technology. Seeing the great points about someone between 45 and 50 people at that age, they're adaptable to it. Other people are slow to adapt. And clearly, that's going to be the driver of the future. It makes it so much smaller, so much more knowledgeable. We're going to have to focus on that. I think it's probably priority. But increased emphasis and focus needs to be on that. Everything that I touch now we can do electronically, and I still have peers that I'm reluctant to do that. I would suggest that. I also, it goes back to some of the things that I continually hear that everyone's concerned about. I mean, it goes back to, you know, the Internet's also a curse because there's so much misinformation. I have a young woman, a young mother of four, with the high school college with my oldest son, and she and I debate food safety all the time. Of course, I read it on the Internet. It's faster. And I have a slightly different opinion about biotechnology. And I not to get off the subject, but I think if we could get this university to really be a great arbitrator of what's consumer preferences and what's food safety. I use this as an example because I see it touching everybody. And there's so many people looking for honest answers that are not spent. Trying to promote an economic advantage for their business. So I see that as one of the, I keep coming back to that all the time. I also keep coming back to elementary and secondary education because I feel we're falling behind as a country. Maybe it's not so much as a state, but certainly as a country. And we are falling behind in rural Minnesota. And we need to improve that. It really bothers us. I don't see students qualifying to get into university from my high school like they should. Preventive medicine, I think, I spent 4 hours last night in the emergency room with my 9-year-old mother. And I'm just thinking, you know, mother, you should have done this and done this and done this. You wouldn't be here tonight. I think I could sleep and I'd be nicer today. But I think there has to be more focus on that. And I see that, particularly in our immigrant community. We have a large immigrant community, and we need to press upon these people not to run to the doctor. This is what you need to do, whether it's dietary, washing your hands, whatever. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's kind of what I'm driving at. I keep coming back to these three things because those three items that I mentioned seem to be on everybody's mind wherever I've been.
I slipped a cog and didn't get number two of your three items. Globalization, consumer choice were one and three.
Technology
was number two.
Mm-hmm.
May I posit in return, we're not that far from each other in years of life under our belts, and so we remember a university and an extension that was different. And I'm wondering, I grew up with the university says, and it was gospel.
That's right.
And it doesn't need to be extension as it looked like in the past, and it doesn't need to be just extension. It can be the other aspects of the university. Would you bring to the Board of Regents kind of a consistent lens of saying, how do we communicate this? How do we have a public face? How do we take a richness of depth of knowledge? Would that be one of the pieces that you would be bringing to the Regents as a lens for how it interfaces with the populace?
Well, if you try to promote the university, most of my promotion is going to be I don't want to be a cheerleader as much as an honest broker. Mm-hmm. And I think in some cases it's difficult sometimes to grasp and think of what the university does. It just is. I would like to see better communication. Perhaps, you know, a lot of times back to the people involved. You go to a meeting that the university is involved in, and there's a good speaker, there's someone more outgoing, and gets people involved in. That's part of the problem. We failed in certain areas of technology. I know people have worked in the university in the past with inviting the time. And I have found that disappointing. They are not articulating what's available, resources we have at the university. And that would be one of the things that I'd like to see done.
is to make sure that we have the right people, not only intellectually, but the ability to articulate and communicate.
I have a follow-up to that, Ardell.
Yep.
Extension uncoupled its structure 20 years ago. You know, they had an office in all 87 counties. There probably was no one in the county who didn't at least know where the extension office was, maybe not in Hennepin and Ramsey, but the rest of the counties. Do you think the regional extension model that is in place now works? And if it does, or if it doesn't, what does it need to do better? Or would you advocate putting more boots on the ground in the counties?
I would probably advocate putting either different type of boot on the ground in some cases. I'm not so sure the expertise that we have in some of the extension areas today is what we might need, particularly as we look forward. Mm-hmm. I don't think the regionalization has hurt so much. We get around a lot more than we do. It's easy for me to contact anybody extension, email. But I think it's important that they... Sometimes I feel they're not grasping some of the cutting edge issues where things are going. Quite frankly, I don't think they're moving as fast as a lot of things are in Minnesota. They're not catching some of the changes, not only in agriculture, but the people that work in it. The diversity that we're really seeing happening, particularly in the last 10 years, in the last 6 or 7 years. I think that's one aspect that needs to change. Probably needs to work on incorporating diversity in extension more than they have in the past. I go back to our Dublin barrier. Our managers are Hispanic. And they would be very comfortable, even though most of them are bilingual, they're more comfortable talking to someone Hispanic.
Follow up. Will you have the courage to surface that and look the head of extension in the eye and tell them where you think they are and where they need to be? And it's not that a regent would restructure, but that's a policy issue.
I wouldn't have no problem telling them where they need to be. I'll probably not tell them where to go.
Very good. Jerry.
I'd like to go back to one of the things you mentioned about the university needs to gain or regain credibility with the legislature. And actually, I'm going to take a little different tack. Over the last couple of years, they have been able to keep their tuition costs flat by working with the legislature doing this. I'm wondering if you think long-term that can be the case. And where I'm leading with this is I suspect it's not a long-term sustainability for keeping student tuition down, but rather we need to find some other sources of revenue in order to keep the entire university intact. What are your ideas about other sources of revenue they might have, other than legislature?
Well, there's probably past the golden opportunity. It's awfully good years in agriculture. That's one of the reasons my family set up a scholarship. We wanted to give back, and it was very easy coming off number of very, very good economic years. That being said, I think there is a lot of businesses in greater Minnesota, large agricultural businesses in this state, food and agricultural businesses, General Mills, Cargill, CHS. I think they'd be willing, and have shown some willingness, and I know that certainly has, to put them on in the university. I would say that we probably need to work harder. Some of those, I'll start with my co-op. Co-ops are consolidated now. They're big businesses. They need agronomists. They need business managers. They get a lot from the university. And I don't think anybody's tapping them. And they're companies that are making $8, $10, $12 million a year, a lot of them some 20,
And I think those, I start with people or companies like that because I think that's an on-tap source. And I've mentioned that to people who raise money with you. Perhaps you should look in that direction. There are other businesses out there. There are a lot of entrepreneurs. And I think they can be tapped. And you have to sell what the university does for them, directly and indirectly. But I think there hasn't been a major effort.
Thank you. Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three questions. First two are very short. How large is your family farm, and what are its general crop characteristics?
We farm roughly 5,000 plus acres, and we raise corn, soybeans, and alfalfa.
Thank you. Secondly, another family, Minnesota family farm. secondly, which do you think institution is more unmanageable, the USDA or the University of Minnesota?
The USDA.
And thirdly, to be more specific in the number of things that you talked about, clearly your agricultural background would be a positive for the university. But what one thing 5-6 years into your term would you like to have said, Mike Yost, affected and impacted the relationship between the university, its ag school, and agriculture in Minnesota? Is there a specific program that said, boy, he accomplished that, it's a sea change of some kind, and it builds on all the things that we talked about generally?
Well, one of the things I've tried to do with that much success is try to get students from Minnesota to come to the school. They tend to want to go to South Dakota State and the USU. That would be one thing I would like to do. The other thing that I'd like to see accomplished is I'd like to see the university prominence go up a step or two. Particularly in the area that I'm most familiar with, the Applied Economics Department, which is very prominent in the document. He used to work here, and I was at Purdue, and he's the go-to person. University of Illinois has a series of short pieces they send out all the time that I find very, very informative every day. And they have a group of professors and graduate students working on these. I'd like to see that department. They do some great work. I'd like to get it out to the greater populace out there, out to producers, and have them view it as a go-to source. And they're doing a great job today on some farm bill. Meetings throughout the state.
Paul. Mr. Yost would like you to help us by connecting some dots. You mentioned food safety. You talked about the university's visibility importance in greater Minnesota having diminished somewhat. Margaret has referenced the change in the structure of extension. How can we use MnDrive, which was a commitment by the legislature to provide additional funding, and one of its four pillars was food safety, to kind of bring these together to raise the visibility and to have more impact?
Maybe I'll address it by just giving a little bit of my philosophy, because I'm not familiar with all the things that Ben Greta is doing. I apologize for that. But there's legitimate food safety concerns, very legitimate food safety concerns. And then there's some that are trumped up. I'm an advocate of biotechnology. I've been to a food aid project in Kenya, and it was a life-changing event. The only way we're going to feed the growing world is through biotechnology. It's going to be a big proponent of. I use that as an example. There's no scientific evidence there's anything wrong. It's consumer choice. If you don't want to eat it, that's fine, but don't tell me it's safer. There's issues where people are doing things that are highly questionable, drinking raw milk. It's got all these extra this and that, but it's there's reason we pastorized it for 100 plus years.
I guess my point in this, and I'm probably a little clumsy in saying it, is this, that I think the university needs to be an honest broker of what are legitimate food safety issues and what are consumer preferences. I don't mind that you eat organic. I don't. That's fine. I just don't see value in it. But that's consumer choice, not a food safety issue. And I think that's where the university needs to really focus its efforts. There's nothing wrong. Consumers are always right. But there's things that you need to do to live a more healthy life. And that's where I see the difference.
Margaret, did you have a question, or was it the follow-up?
No, I just think I keep going back to that's the type of candor, though, that has to be addressed by the regions, not to solve every issue strategically or tactically, but to raise that brokering issue. I am going to ask you a question. You know, healthcare, they're losing a giant on the board in Patty Simmons. And healthcare is called in circles across the United States One Health or Comprehensive Health, which means from food safety to passing away and everything in between, the environment and et cetera. What value added will you bring to the regents given that healthcare and the health sciences is 40% of the university budget today?
Well, I don't pretend to be a healthcare expert. I just use it and pay for it. I supply healthcare for our employees, or we do on our farm. And maybe, you know, I look at a lot of issues through the six people that work for me. You know, they're really a cross-section of society. And one of the big issues we have collectively, it goes back to affordability. You know, we cover them. It's expensive. We have a fairly high deductible. And also, it's the availability of health care. How far do we have to go off in Minnesota? What I think I would bring to the Board of Regents, maybe not. I don't have the answers. I'll be very, very honest about that. But I do have I have questions and I have concerns. And I think I can reflect things that I not only see but affect everybody in Greater Minnesota. I'm quite frankly, I think metropolitan. I think it's more trying to highlight the issues and push them towards solving. I learned when I went to Washington not to be an area. quickly discovered.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Yost, something you touched on that struck me. You talked about education failing students, particularly in Greater Minnesota, and that students in your high school weren't qualifying. I've been sitting on some working groups for higher ed, and one of the primary issues that face higher ed in the university is student preparedness. How do you see the university's role, and then particularly in Greater Minnesota, to help close that gap? And maybe even more specifically, with some of the ethnic populations that you work with.
Now, some of it's just plain local politics. Maybe the university has to start saying, you know, these hyphenated school districts out there aren't the answer. Everyone likes to have their son or daughter be in the band, be on the football team, the basketball team. But, you know, in my case, my sons went to a school graduating classes around 50, both in here at the university, were able to get in, did well here. But they had two or three key instructors that were there, particularly mathematics and science, and they carried the day. And I watched what happened when those instructors left. I mean, the best teacher in our school district was the science teacher, from physics and chemistry.
sons or daughters would be going to Wilmer, which is a town school district about five or six times as big. There'd be at least five or six options in science. It's a one-trick pony at KMS. One person teaches it. But quality individual, you're in luck. If it's not, they're going to have a tough time. And we saw it. We saw it in other subjects. And they saw it when they got here and had to compete against it. Part of it is just raising that issue. Be just telling them, start to talk about it. Our students are being educated as well as they can be in these small schools, particularly those students that don't want to be post-secondary school. And the other thing is the university needs to, and anybody that, any institution that trains teachers, we need a source for it. Just be blunt about it. Very blunt. I think it's been a failure. That we need to source better people, encourage them to get there and compensate us. And also, we have to encourage people to leave the profession if they're not there.
Thank you. Pat.
Well, Mike, as I was sitting here, you've brought up and answered about three questions in the last two questions. So, but at the beginning, when I asked my first one at the beginning of the question, and I said I wanted to challenge you to say, what do you know besides ag? Obviously, you're one of our state's great resources when it comes to understanding the ag sector. And so in addition to what do you know about ag, and you shared with us an understanding of education and an opinion, what do you can you help us understand how the various higher ed components that we have in our state, the University of Minnesota, the Minsky system, and the private colleges, what roles they each play and how they can interact with each other?
I'll try, Pat. From my perspective, the University of Minnesota has always been the leading institution of higher education in the state. It always has, probably always been. The high school classmate that went to St. John's and his, all three of his kids at the University of Minnesota because without question, he's about it. And but the University of Minnesota is more than educating students. I mean, it's the research aspect of it, it's the hospital aspect of it, it's the extension aspect of it. And I think that's what differentiates it with the Minsky system. They are playing second chair. They are primarily for education. Some of them have tried to go beyond that. But I think as the University of Minnesota goes, so goes education in the state of Minnesota.
Any other questions? If not, your closing statement.
Well, once again, thank you for taking the time to talk to me this morning, and I want to wish you luck. It's not the end of the world if I don't get this position, but it is important to the University of Minnesota to have good regents. I'm obviously none of us are running for this position or in it for the money. we're in it for the greater good. I have a lot of experience outside the farm. I've worked in government, managed two large government agencies, one with a domestic component, the other with an international component. I've handled large sums of money when I was there. I led a national trade organization, learned how to push the board to conclusions, how to do policy but not micromanage an institution or a trade association. I also think I have the passion for this university, and I also have the energy and the time to serve in the Board of Regents. You know, and finally, I want to become a Board of Regents, a member of the Board of Regents, because I know what a difference it's made in my life. I know what a difference it's made in my son's life. I know what a difference it's made in my friend's life. And I know what a difference it can and should be make for all Minnesotans. And with that, I will let you go on to somebody more important.
No, I don't think it's more important, but thank you so much.
Yes,
appreciate
thank you,
it.
Mike.
Thank you.